Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, we're always glad to have the opportunity to connect with you as we talk about connecting faith to life. You know, can we apply biblical principles to daily life situations? We're going to talk about the daily life experience of parenting. And Ted, you've got a couple of teens, right?
Yes, indeed. It's summertime, you know.
Okay.
So I don't want to give them time to relax. That's what summer's about. But there's also that element of this.
Take out the papers, you know? And the
yeah. So we're at that stage, those battles. I had to leave a note, in fact, today for my youngest to go ahead and finish her chores from yesterday.
Really? So. Okay. Yeah. So, well, our conversation today is all about Ted and his parenting challenges. No, we all have them. You know, it doesn't really matter what age our kids. Our guest today, her children are now ages between ages 10 and 21, but about 5-6 years ago, her as a mother of five children, decided that, you know, we need to make sure that our children understand that life doesn't just sort of get handed to them on a silver platter.
That's right. That hard work does pay off. And if you don't do it, then there's consequences for that, too, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't think we want to go there.
Yeah, we're meddling now.
We just thought it would be a good time to talk with Kay Wills-Wyma, welcome her back to Connecting Faith. You know, before motherhood, she held positions at the U.S. State Department of State, the White House, and Bank of America. And she's a popular blogger, posts to attract more than 10,000 unique views per month, holds a bachelor's degree from Baylor University. And an MIM from the American Graduate School of International Management, and she and her husband, John, live with their family in the Dallas area, and she's written a wonderful book. Came out some years ago. We do have some copies to give away, because you may have never heard the conversation. It'll be fun to just get reconnected with Kay Wills-Wyma. Wrote a book called Cleaning House, and the subtitle is A Mom's 12-Month Experiment to Rid Her Home of Youth Entitlement. That's kind of where we need the music to fade out. Entitlement.
Yes.
And Kay, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Well, thanks so much for having me. Y'all always have a good time.
Yeah, we do. And, you know, and the reality is that youth entitlement hasn't gone away in the past 5-6 years, has it?
No, it hasn't. And it's interesting because you'll see it definitely, you'll see articles or you'll see hot videos that are on social media that deal with it. And there sure is one with just even right now that's going around just with that whole thing of dealing with cell phones and why people are kids so are so wrapped up in that. And then everybody taking it back to, it wasn't like that when I was a kid. And I remember having to help out around the house and do all these kinds of things and my parents not hovering and doing everything for me. And then I think people get frustrated and it's like, oh, those kids. And but the truth of the matter is, it is such a trend in society that begins when kids are, you know, just so young. This idea of paving the path for the kid instead of preparing the child for the path, and so it's it leaves everybody in a bit of a conundrum and not liking what's on the other side of it.
Did you have a sense early on in your, you know, parenting, you and your husband say, you know, are we doing the right job here? Are we helping our kids? I mean, because, I mean, it is the, you know, parents' job to take care of kids, right? So you sort of get used to maybe into a routine. I'll just, you know, I'm doing the laundry, I'm cleaning the bathroom, all those things.
Yeah. We had so many so quickly. and I honestly, I thought some stuff was strange. And I remember thinking, like, I would go into a house and every socket would have, like, a little thing in it so the kid couldn't stick their fingers in the socket. And the, you know, the child-proofing your house and almost being judged on how child-proof and safe your house would be. And when we had so many children so quickly, and I didn't necessarily have all the time in the world to, you know, remember to put the baby gate up or those kinds of things. And I remember thinking, I can teach my dog to not go out in the street because we had a lab and she would stay in our front yard. And I was like, why wouldn't I be able to teach my kids the same thing? You know, that kind of thing. Why are we not teaching them to not stick their hands in a socket versus like making sure the socket is covered. And I thought that was weird. Not like weird, but kind of, I think I'm a little bit flaky, and to think that I'd have to be on top of all that stuff all the time was almost too much for me, because it just was too much. And that's where it hit me, because I don't think anybody would have labeled me as a helicopter parent, because I was the person that would take my kids to the park and kind of show them the drop-offs and be like, don't step off, it will hurt. And then I'd go sit down because I was so tired. And I would hear the parents talking like, oh my gosh, gasping as my child would walk close to the drop-off. And they'd be like, where's that mother? There's no mother. Where's the mother? Oh, and they'd turn to each other and go, oh, that must be the nanny over there that's not watching that kid. And it'd be my children. I was like, oops. But it was interesting because as I set the boundaries and taught them the boundaries, not one of them walked off the playground equipment. I mean, and I learned a lot through that. And so it floored me as I hit the day where I got so frustrated with the whole situation, realizing that I was doing so much for them rather than teaching them how to do it, because I had just kind of fallen into step with that. And as soon as I started to put responsibilities on their plate, and I mean, it's all the free stuff in your house, like the laundry, like the cooking dinner. I mean, you name it, just things that make someone independent in life. As I started to put it on their plate, because I was sort of mad that they were looking to me to do everything, I started to realize quickly what I was stealing from them by not allowing them to do it on their own, because it really genuinely puts a sense of independence within them. And I've watched through the years them not have their identity defined by so many of the things that really scare us these days.
I love that. Before one of the chapters, you have little quotes, and of course I always read those first whenever I read a book, but from Abigail Van Buren says, you want children to keep their feet on the ground, put some responsibility on their shoulders. And that's a pretty good summary of the book Cleaning House, I think.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to it. And even hearing you say that, I'm like, it is so true. And then a part of me is like, oh, that sounds so mean.
Yeah.
but it's not. It's like, I think we think it's mean. And if I can switch my mentality and kind of go, that has nothing to do with being mean. It has everything to do with, you know what? I actually believe they can do this stuff. Like, and allowing them to do it actually prepares them to be able to do much greater things in life, rather than having to be worried when they're 23 years old trying to figure out how to wash their clothes. Why not take that out of the picture, since they have plenty of other stuff to worry about?
Yeah. You know, we should probably go back to the point when you decided to start the experiment, and you know, you can just summarize it. You decided that you're going to take a whole year to figure this out, but there was kind of a tipping point. Just let's go back and review that story.
Well, there was a tipping point. I always wonder if they wish the conversation had never happened, but I think they're all actually really happy that it did. But it all started with a carpool when I was driving down one of the busier streets here in Dallas, and I had a budding teenager riding next to me, and there was a Porsche on our right and a Lexus on the left and a Maserati in front of us, which honestly I did not know what a Maserati was. I'd heard of that name, but I didn't know what it was. And the kid next to me was like, which one of those cars would I look good in when I turn 16? And I was just like swallowing the vomit in my throat going, please, you did not just say that. And when he did, I was like, oh, I don't like that he would even think that. And what he really was saying in that moment is, I want to be okay. Like, I just, and I think a car would make me okay. And when I went home, grossed out by that, there were clothes all over the floor, every dish was out. I mean, it just was a slight wreck, and that sort of overwhelmed me. And I was just like, this is gross. They're looking to me to do this for them. And then I was like, well, I think I'm grooming them to look to me to do that. And they're looking to the state. And then I was like, they're looking to the state to serve them. And then I was sitting there going, that's socialism. And I don't even believe in that. And I'm grooming it. And that was that. It was so over at that point. And I really mentally went around my house going, do they know that the food doesn't just appear? You know, food that they don't like. Because, of course, kids complain about whatever it is. And do they realize there's a budget? Do they realize that you plan out what you're doing? And I mean, just I really went from room to room being a little bit convicted that, no, if I, you know, if they needed to do it today, just on their own, could they do it? And I was mad, and I'm just telling you, when mom's mad, things change. They just do.
Well, we're glad they did, and out of it came a wonderful resource called Cleaning House, a mom's 12-month experiment to rid her home of youth entitlement. And it really does provide a wonderful summary of kind of a year in the life of the Wyma family and the five kids and just all that went into that. But there were some amazing things that happened in terms of feeding and clothing and being responsible and learning some good lessons. We're going to pick up on some of the lessons learned here in the moments ahead, so I want to encourage you to stay tuned. Kay Wills Wyma is our guest today, a mom of five children, and they're now between ages of 10 and 21. And the book is called Cleaning House, and we do have a couple of copies to give away. So we'll invite you to join in. We'll do a drawing for those resources. You call 877-933-2484 and then give Carissa your contact information. We'll put you in for the drawing. 877-93-FAITH. Or if you want to submit it online, you can go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. And maybe that you have a question. Maybe you have a entitled youth in your house to go, I need some help. Kay will be happy to answer your questions coming up in just a moment. All I can do. Well, you know, mom and dads aren't at the same level of gratitude as our Savior should be, but certainly a little bit of gratitude goes a long way. We're talking about youth entitlement and a mom's 12-month experiment to rid her home of that dreaded disease. Talking Cleaning House today with Kay Wills Wyma, mom of five. Before she was at home taking care of those kiddos, she worked in the U.S. State Department at the White House and Bank of America, and she has a popular blog and attracting thousands of views per month. And she's with us today talking about youth entitlement. And I got to ask you, Kay, I guess, you know, here we are in the middle of summer. Kids probably sleeping in summer mornings. Any advice on what's a reasonable schedule? I mean, your kids are, you know, kind of a wide range, and they probably do need a little bit of sleep, but...
Yes, because they do have, like, it's kids are living through a lot of pressure during the school year, and I've noticed that especially as we hit the high school years. So later junior high school years are treacherous to a certain extent, just the pressures that are on them and what that does. You know, it's like pressures from grades, pressures from social aspects, pressures from athleticism, like whatever it is that you're in, it seems like it's on steroids. And crazy as it is, we have really found, and I can only attribute it to a lot of this, their own being able to handle their own schedules and their own lives actually has put fuel in their tank and makes it them less likely to let other things inform them, their identity, which they may not be able to say it that way, but that actually is what's going on. And so... I think it's dialed down a little bit of the pressure, but during the summer, I definitely let them breathe. But at the same time, if all they're doing was watching TV all day, it's terrible. Because, like, I think any of us would physically feel bad, like, if we watched television or stared at a screen all day long. And so we've definitely, and just for fun, even this summer, have done kind of a reboot, trying to just kind of revisit some of these things that as they become... at certain ages where they forget how to, like, make their breakfast. One of them stood in front of the toaster, I'm not kidding you, with a frozen waffle not so long ago and said, I don't know how to do this. I'm like, why are you even saying that? Like, who are you saying that to? And so it's been fun to even put some, like, methodically set some stuff in front of them this summer. And I am not sure they wouldn't even say the word fun, although there is whining that comes around almost anything you put in front of a kid. But
sure.
We have definitely reintroduced the chores, going down the list, like the kitchen. You know, here you get to do your meal this week. And And I will say, Neil, one of the most fun things about putting these responsibilities on the kid's plate is that you might be surprised at what your kid can do. They are for sure surprised, but it has floored me how surprised I am. And so for dinner last night, we had literally homemade pasta because one of mine loves cooking, which I'm not sure she would have ever known to fall in love with cooking if it hadn't been kind of a forced thing. And now she makes her own pasta, which I can't tell you how good it is, and her own sauce, like from scratch. And she made her own ciabatta bread this summer, which she said to me, I'm going to make this ciabatta bread because I want to learn how to make it. And she's sitting in the front seat, and she goes, but, you know, I just need to tell you that, like, the first one is going to be bad, and maybe the second one too. And she goes, but I will learn how to do it because I'll figure out what works and what doesn't work. And I was listening to her going, you just encapsulated the whole thing. She's not afraid of failure. She knows that she's going to learn something from failure. It's not making her run away from it. It's making her run to it. And I always felt like that with responsibility on their plate, they look at mountains not as obstacles anymore, but as opportunities. And it's really fun to slow down and watch it at play. And it's not so bad to be on the other side of her cooking because it's, besides the gaining of weight, it's been really fun.
Well, and what a good feeling as a mom too, right? Hey, this is, you know, she's picked up on what we've been trying to set out as a way of living.
Well, and it's so, she's such a cool person. Like I sit there and go, I can't believe I get to walk life along these people because they're just such neat people. And when, you know, when you start to see them as just human beings and that you're really there just for such a short period of time to just kind of walk alongside and teach and train and hopefully find what their giftedness is, because we know that every single person has a unique purpose and giftedness as a human, and that you get to enjoy these people that you're walking alongside. It has been such a joy, and they're all so different. And so I'm glad that even this whole thing, as goofy as it's been or sounds, it's even dialed down the pressure on me as a parent as if there's some right way, you know, because I think we can be duped into that, into thinking, well, this is the way, this is the shtick. And the shtick is loving your kid.
So did you, I mean, is there anything wrong with parents just, you know, working together with their kids on errands? I mean, I know there's
oh
the challenge
God, no.
of going overboard and doing, you know, their school projects for them. But theoretically, you can maybe show by example, right? And plus it would go faster. So is faster a value that is worth taking over some responsibility for?
Well, what a great question. And I think a huge part of that question, of the answer, is what's your motive? You know, am I doing it because they need to get an A and because everything, you know, their life is going to go into turmoil if they don't get a certain GPA or if they fail because it's not turned in? Like, is that, am I motivated by fear or am I motivated by selfish gain? You know, something like that, or I want to look a certain way. If that's my motivation, then there's probably something wrong with that. But if I'm motivated by, you know what, they know how to do this. They do a great job on their stuff. They do handle their own things. But I would enjoy this. Like, it would be fun to do it together. Or maybe I don't even know how to do it. I've learned a lot from my kids on things that, quite frankly, I'm terrible at. Like, with all the chores, quote, that I set up, you know, I did it like one task per chapter. There were several of those tasks that I am horrible at. Like, one of them was doing the outside work, like the yard and flowers. Well, I kill every single thing that comes into my presence. Like, it's just dead. And so, but still, I learned that I didn't have to know everything to be able to help train them to learn it, because thank goodness for YouTube that can show you even how to snake a shower, you know?
It's true. It's true. Well, you know, there may be some parents even now helping kids with their last-minute college applications. Is that a legitimate area where we can assist, or aren't the stakes too big to leave it up to them alone?
I think you have to look at the big picture on the whole. And it would be so nice if there were a simple answer like, yes, do this, no, do that, because different kids are different. I've learned a lot about that. When I started out the whole thing, it was like, this is the way we're doing it, and, you know, it's a make or break deal. And as the chores, as I started adding on tasks, I started to realize, well, they can't do all this at the same time. And then I started to realize, oh, some of them are actually really, really gifted in this area. Why not pile that on there and even teach them that our house works as a team, as a unit, which was an enormous part of the entire process, because on the other side of almost every task that is occurring in your house is someone receiving it. And so involved in all of that is the beauty of the greatest commandment, you know, love others. So when we were even doing the laundry, it was like, put your brother's, you know, socks away the way he wants them put away, because you're serving him, and it gets your eyes off yourself. On things like college applications, there's so much heat involved in that. And I learned that the hard way with our oldest. When I did, I was like, you do the whole thing yourself. And I watched him starting to tank. And I realized there's something involved in that that's not speaking truth to him. And every box he had to check on what he accomplished or didn't accomplish wasn't doing anything good for him. It was showing him all the things he hadn't done. And I really was sitting there going, he needs me to walk alongside him on this, because the message he's receiving is not true. And so for him, he needed that. For my daughter, she wanted nothing to do with me on that. It's like, I had no idea when she turned in anything, nothing. And very happily, I have one kid that if you put her at the head of a corporation, she could easily run it. And then I have others that are very artsy and happy to have things done for them. And so I think a lot of it goes into knowing your child and what's the best way to love that kid. And that may sound kind of flighty, but I really think that on the other side of this, you want individual human beings that are capable to productively live life with their eyes on others and on the Lord.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. Wow, what a good insight. Getting some great insights today from Kay Wills Wyma. Kay's a mother of five. Her and her husband, John, family live in the Dallas area. She blogs, a popular blog and a parenting blog. And she, before doing the parenting thing all the time, she had worked at the U.S. Department of State, the White House, Bank of America. And she's written a wonderful book based on as the subtitle says, a mom's 12-month experiment to rid her home of youth entitlement. The book is called Cleaning House. And we do have a couple of copies that we'll give away, and love to get one in your hands. You just find it very helpful. And Kay writes just like she speaks, just engaging and entertaining and insightful. So give us a call, 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH, and you can sign up for copy of a couple of copies of Kay's book. And coming up after the break, we're going to talk about the half done is good enough mentality. How do we work on that with our kids? Talking about work and maybe circle back to socialism a little bit. All that just ahead with Kay Wills Wyma.
Mom and Dad, and not being sad, I'm thankful for clothes to wear, for long pretty hair. I'm thankful for doing my best for debts that's a mess. I'm thankful. Praise the Lord.
We're talking about ridding our homes of youth entitlement. Kay Wills Wyma took on the project over a 12-month time period and wrote about it. A great journey and journal. You'll find it, Cleaning House, the name of the book. A mom's 12-month experiment to rid her home of youth entitlement. She continues to blog and to write. In fact, if you go to kwyma.com, you'll find some links to her blog and other resources there, and videos, some things, too, that will just encourage you in your parenting and looking at how we can be good stewards of the resources God entrusted to us. So, Kay, let's talk a little bit about the idea of taking on those assignments, whatever they are, and doing them well. You know, there's this kind of a half done is good enough mentality, and we all suffer from it. But how did you help break that habit?
That one is such a challenge. You know, the half done. I think a big trend today in school is, even though we wouldn't want to even think that our kids would be tempted, is cheating. Like, that's a huge thing right now. And so here's the deal on that. I've watched kids thrive on high expectations, which I actually think people do in general. And so, like, even if we sat there in our lives and I was like, oh, what was my best job? Like, what was my favorite job? Or what team might I have played on that really was the best team I've, you know, experienced? And I think on the other side of that, we would tend to find someone, a boss or a coach or a teacher, that actually had high expectations for us and probably put the line of achievement out further than we would have thought we could do it. And so you work harder for those things. And so if you allow the half done to be at play, it's kind of saying, without saying it out loud, oh, that's all you can do. Like, you can't do more. And I think kids are so quick to hear that. They think negatively about themselves. I think we probably do too, and we underestimate ourselves. And so the half done, I just find that so brutal. And I will tell my kids, you have so much more worth than that. Like, don't do that, because you actually have more worth than that. So it's like, if they, you know, wanted to lie about something, it's like, don't lie. Like, the lie will trick you into believing that you're a liar, and you're not. And it's the same with half done. It's like, you've got so much to offer and so much to give, and you have so much opportunity and worth. It's like, don't buy into that, because it's just not true. And so, you know, rather than making it about the thing and like, you will do this, it's sort of like, let me tell you who you are. And so I've kind of feel like, of late, I feel like parents, like the helicopter parenting, if we could just switch it from making it helicopter parenting, where we race in and do and save and manipulate and do all that kind of stuff, if you could take helicopter parenting and just switch it and make it so that you're helicoptering, like you're above, but simply to provide perspective, because you can't see the perspective a lot of times when you're in the moment, and be able to help redefine it and kind of just say, by the way, and, you know, when they're freaking out over a grade or something like that, then 5 years, this, you know that you won't even remember this grade. So please don't let it steal from your joy today. And all anybody is asking you is your best. Like, just do your best. Nobody else's best, just your best. And that nobody, we're not asking anything more of you than that. And because they need to hear it over and over and over and over, because they're duped into believing things like, I need to have, you know, a comma in the amount of friends that I have, because on the social media platforms, the more friends you have, the more okay you are. So having 10,000 is better than having, you know, 5, which in reality is not true, because it's not real. And to help redefine these environments, to breathe life into it for them, is just, I think, one of the biggest parts of our job as a parent right now. But it's really hard to believe it if I'm sucked into the game too.
Say a bit more about how we praise our kids, of thinking, you know, when they do what's expected. I mean, even, you know, Jesus tells the story about the servants had to prepare the meal for the master before sitting down and enjoying their own. And they said, well, we just did what we were called to do. I mean, we're, you know, help us understand how to, I guess, motivate and praise and encourage our kids when they're doing chores or the things that they should be doing anyway.
I think there's a huge, I actually think it's very easy to do that, because quite frankly, their friends aren't doing it. And so in and of that self, it's like, yes, I know you're doing this. I know it seems boring, but the fact that you keep doing it is actually preparing you for great things in life. And which is true, because none of us like the monotony of any job we've ever worked at. And monotony is always a part of it, just like the stuff in the house. You know, I emptied the dishes yesterday. Well, yes, and we'll empty them today, and we'll empty them tomorrow. And so it just keeps getting us in the mode of knowing what it's like to do it, even to start and complete something. which if you back up, that's a really great, that's a great attribute to have in your character. I start something, I complete it. And like the other day with my daughter that was happy to make ciabatta bread. Well, she had never made it, but she wasn't afraid to fail because she had tried and failed and tried and failed and tried and failed, but she keeps doing it, and she knows because she's done it so often that after multiple tries, she'll either get it right or it really wasn't, she's happy to move on because that might not be in the wheelhouse of like what she can do. And those are around things in our house that are free. There's no personal trainer coming in. There's no, tutoring session. It's just life because we're walking along beside each other in those very beautiful ways where parents are the ones that are the stewards over their life for such a short period of time. And it goes so fast. It's like, don't waste a moment of it because you blink and it actually is gone.
Just thinking, you worked in the White House, Department of State, Bank of America. I mean, those are high functioning, in general, high functioning places. But so there's not really room for the kind of slacker or a half done kind of thing. Or are you concerned maybe about the work ethic of our young people today?
I think that they get thrown under the bus by people not expecting anything from them. And I think it is a complete disservice. I think in days gone by, you could rest assured that at school that the bar was being set high and that there were people that were forcing those things, and that's not the case anymore. And so I feel like how much more at home we need to be doing that and believing them enough to be able to put the stuff on their plate. And I would tell mine that all the time. You can do this. You can do it. You can do it. I can't, which mine would say, I promise you, if I told one of them tonight, hey, by the way, this is on the meal plan. Good luck with that. He'd be like, I can't until he's doing it. And then he realizes he can do it. And it's something good on the other side of it. And those little things are seeds that hopefully will grow to a point to where when they really are pressed for something, they do step up because it's not something that isn't new to them. They're accustomed to it, and they know they're safe and they're going to be okay and that their self-worth isn't going to be defined by something that is likely to be a failure. Because if you look at anybody through history that has done anything, I can tell you one thing that has paved that path, and it's a load of failure. And so even when I worked in D.C., oh, my gosh, the pressure was intense. For sure. But one thing you couldn't do was quit. Quitting was so not an option. And getting back up always was required. And it was hard. But gosh, I look back and I'm so grateful. I'm grateful that was a part even of my childhood.
Well, and that's, I guess, if we were able to, as parents, maybe help our kids with one thing, that would probably be a pretty good goal, wouldn't it? Just to get them not to quit, to not give up.
Yeah, and that when you do something, you do it well. Like, you don't just do it, you do it well. And believe it or not, there's a lot of things in your house that offer that opportunity. From the point of folding laundry, well, I could just like dump all the laundry in a drawer and you can't see it anymore, and technically it's put away. But it really isn't put away because when you pick up that shirt, it's got wrinkles all over it, and what a shame, because you're making somebody go through the day with a wrinkly shirt, which sounds so silly. But there's a point of learning how to do the task and then reaching for excellence because you can. And people feel better when you do it with excellence than you do with some half job. And I think a lot of that is because the message that's implied in the half job, you can't do it all the way. And so the answer is yes, they can. And in all of this, you just might find what the giftedness is of these people that are walking alongside you. And that's kind of fun.
Got just a minute left. Would you write anything different or do it different if you were doing it today?
I learned so much in it while I was doing it. And I think the thing that I would go, breathe, breathe through it. Because I think I would like for there to be an A plus B equals C. Like, if we do this and then we do that, then this is what's on the other side. And the thing that I've really learned is that these kids aren't a product. I think that they are inundated with this concept of branding, like branding themselves. And I think we get it as parents. You know, your kid will only be okay if. And I've learned so much about them just as being human beings, and they have so much worth. And what a privilege it is to get to love these kids that are in your house. And so, yeah, it's given me more incentive than ever to be able to have them be independent so they can really genuinely do what they were created to do.
Great insight. Always good to connect. And thanks for Kay Wills-Wyma coming on today to help us think more about the ridding home of youth entitlement and some great parenting tips. Kay Wills-Wyma is a mom of five, and she writes and blogs regularly. Check out the website, kwyma.com. And the book is called Cleaning House. Got a couple books to give away. We'll do that drawing here at the top of the hour. 877-93-FAITH is the phone number. Kay, great to visit with you again. Blessings to you. Enjoy the rest of your summer.
Thanks, Neil. It's always a pleasure.
You're listening to Connecting Faith. Coming up in a moment, speaking of gratitude, we're going to hear from someone who has spent 50 years in a wheelchair. Johnny Tade is guest just ahead. You're listening to Connecting Faith, talking about gratitude. Can you be grateful for being in a wheelchair for 50 years? Stay tuned. We're talking to Johnny Erickson Tada today, founder and CEO of Johnny and Friends. It's an organization that accelerates Christian outreach in the disability community. And one of the reasons we're talking is because it's a 50th anniversary. And, you know, we think about various reasons for anniversaries, and that Johnny's anniversary has a chair attached to it. Johnny, welcome. Good to talk with you again.
Good to be with you, especially on this 50th anniversary. I don't know if you call it a celebration or, you know, just a milestone or what you call it. But boy, 50 years as a quadriplegic, that's a long time.
Well, you know, I was thinking you and your team, I think it was last year, put out the new Beyond Suffering Bible, and the subtitles, you know, where struggles seem endless, God's hope is infinite. And certainly, I mean, 50 years may not be endless, but that is an awful long time. Has it seemed endless to you, or why not?
Well, you know, it's so funny, Neil, because the other day I was reading 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 10, where Peter says, after you've suffered a little while, the God of all grace will himself restore and confirm, strengthen, and establish you. And I read those words, suffered a little while. And I tell you, looking back over 50 years, I really have to say I'm amazed that it feels like only a little while. I mean, maybe it's God who does that when we finally learn to trust him. And now, even as I look back, I cannot really recall the horror of it all, the despair and the mind-numbing depression. I guess that's because when we learn how to trust God, he pushes into the background all those terrible times of anguish, and he brings forward just the highlights, just the moments of hope, just those moments and seasons of peace and growth. That's what we end up remembering. And so even though 50 years is, in fact, a very long time, the Bible calls it only a little while. And what else is also fun, Neil, is thinking that it's a very little while until I graduate to heaven. My goodness, I'm in my late 60s now, and I don't know how many more years the Lord Jesus will give me. Hopefully years of good health and strength and stamina that I can continue to do the kinds of things I so enjoy doing at Johnny and Friends, helping other people with disabilities. But no matter how long it is, I just want to stay faithful. I want God to confirm, strengthen, and establish me in whatever he's up to in my life.
Johnny, I was thinking, you mentioned 1 Peter 5:10. I'm wondering, are there verses or passages of Scripture that maybe resonate more with you today than they did, you know, 30, 40, or 50 years ago, that you see them differently now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Neil. I'm thinking of a verse that I often rehearse to myself from 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 16 to 18. It says, therefore, we do not lose heart. Our listeners will love this one. For though outwardly we are wasting away, inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary afflictions, oh my goodness, you mean my quadriplegia is light and momentary? Well, the Bible says our light and momentary afflictions are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. That's what makes it seem light. and momentary. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen, the scriptures go on, because what is seen is only temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. And Neil, you mentioned the Beyond Suffering Bible. You mentioned your disabilities and Johnny and Friends. I want to squeeze every single ounce of ministry effort that I possibly can out of this quadriplegic body to increase my eternal estate, to make certain that that eternal glory that awaits me will be rich and full and deep, and that it will be as joyful as I can possibly help make it through my investments down here on earth. And I would encourage all our listeners to do the same. You know, no matter what their trials, problems, pressures, distresses, maybe it's not quadriplegia, you know, maybe it's not a broken neck, maybe it's a broken home or a broken heart or, you know, any other kind of brokenness in your life. Don't waste your suffering. Oh, my goodness, our time down here, as we said, is just a little while, and we are but wisps and fading smokes and a little bit of vapor here today, gone tomorrow. And what we do as Christians down here on earth, it's got this direct bearing on our capacity for joy and worship and service in heaven. I don't want to waste that. So whatever strength God gives me in the wheelchair, I want to make certain I use it. And like Rumpelstiltskin, turn it into something gold for eternity.
You know, Johnny, I was thinking that when you speak and the radio broadcast, you're cheery, you're positive, you're encouraging. I'm wondering, do people maybe react to you sometime when they speak, say, you know, that can't be the real you because, you know, you just sound too up?
Well, I must tell you that my smile is hard fought for. It's not made out of Colgate. It's not pasted on. It is really hard fought for every morning, and I've shared this with our listeners before. I wake up every morning, and it is so hard. I'm in such pain, and the girls who get me up, they've got to really stretch me, exercise my limbs, give me a bed bath, do my toileting routines, strap on my binder and my corset, get me dressed, sit me up in a wheelchair. And I tell you, Neil, day after day after day, 50 years of that routine, that'll wear you out, and that'll get you discouraged. Plus, there are all kinds of different encroachments now that I'm getting older. So when I wake up in the morning, I say, Jesus, I just can't do this one more day. I'm so tired of quadriplegia. I can't do it, but I can do all things through you as you strengthen me. And Neil, as I step into that reality, as I grab that promise and make it my own, he gives joy. And so I've got to fight to stay satisfied in God. I've got to fight to stay happy in him. But it's a good fight. And the Bible says, Paul says, you know, I have fought the good fight. And that's not easy. It's a challenge. But the rewards are out of this world. And I'm so grateful that the smile that I offer to others and to my husband and to my close friends and acquaintances, it's real. But it's real because I also confess it's hard. Yet this is the courage of the Christian life. This is what it means to live the Christian life. Anybody who thinks it's easy has not read the Bible or is imagining their Christian walk. But the genuine Christian walk that grabs hold of joy through every test and trial, that takes a fight. That takes a lot of courage.
Well, one of your initiatives, Wheels for the World, has shared help and hope globally, and we have a lot to be thankful for here in terms of support services. But say a bit about that initiative, Wheels for the World, maybe where you've been sending chairs and supplies this year.
Well, Wheels for the World is our outreach where we collect used but serviceable wheelchairs, and we do it at our Johnny and Friends office. And you can go on our website at johnnyandfriends.org and click on the link, and you get all the details about where you can drop off a wheelchair, a used but serviceable wheelchair that you're no longer requiring. And it's a wonderful outreach where we then take these wheelchairs, we ship them to any one of 15 different prisons, and we have a marvelous group of volunteers who then raise their own support and take those wheelchairs that have been restored by inmates in prison. And these physical therapists, these volunteers, come with us on Wheels for the World teams where they specifically fit the wheelchairs to people with disabilities. And it's just a wonderful way to share the good news of Jesus Christ. So if anybody here in the listening area has a wheelchair that they're not using any longer, then I would encourage you to contact our team in Hopkins, Minnesota, not far from where you all are. And again, you can simply go to johnnyandfriends.org/Minnesota and get all the details about where you can drop off a wheelchair or where you can volunteer at our family retreat. We would love to have you participate with us.
Before I let you go, I know that I did a program recently, talked about some of the bioethical challenges and concerns we're facing, and more people seem to be enamored with by a life without suffering or pain. I know you've been a voice in this area as well. What are some of the frontline concerns you see in terms of bioethics and maybe the future of our quote-unquote health care?
Well, what I really love is taking that fight right where the fight is happening. And right now, there are so many states around the United States that are legalizing physician-assisted suicide. It's legalized in more than 6 states now. A person who is despairing of his terminal illness can, in fact, ask his doctor to give him lethal drugs, which would be an assisted suicide. And right now, those laws only provide for people with terminal illnesses to ask for doctor-assisted death. But it won't take more than 1 or 2 court challenges to widen the definition of what a terminal illness is. And soon, I'm afraid, soon and very soon, we may see people with multiple sclerosis or Lou Gehrig's disease. We may see these people ask for doctor-assisted death. And that is not a good sign for the elderly. It's not good for those with disabilities. So those of us who are believers, followers of Jesus and disabled, we're fighting the legalization of euthanasia in other states around the country because we've got to get rid of this premise that you're better off dead than disabled. We just have to help people see that life is worth living, no matter how challenging your physical condition, because the stakes are huge. They're cosmic. They're out of this world. And we have to encourage people to turn to the God of all hope. He's the one who created us, and we bear his image, which means that every human life should be treated with dignity and respect. So let's support those with disabilities. Let's support the elderly. There is a difference between medical treatment, which sustains life, and medical treatment, which does nothing more than prolong the process of dying. But that is a distinction that has to be prayed over, conferred with your physician over, and it's one that you don't want to make without grave implications. So Christians need to get into the battle. We need to take the battle to where the fight is at its fiercest. And right now, I'm afraid many Christians are buying into this better off dead than disabled mentality. And we've got to give them a different perspective. And you mentioned at the top of our time together, Beyond Suffering Bible. That is a great resource and has wonderful articles in it about end-of-life issues.
I recommend it to you, Beyond Suffering Bible. It's where struggles seem endless. God's hope is infinite, and we've just experienced that even at our short time together talking with Johnny Tata. She wrote a devotional book, or released it here, I think, last year, A Spectacle of Glory, God's Light Shining Through Me Every Day. And we can say that Johnny, is, she said, even though it's a fight every day, she helps us see that through her speaking, her teaching, her writing, her artwork, and we're just so honored to wish you God's blessing as you continue on. As you say, you can kind of squeeze every ounce of opportunity out to serve the Lord as he gives you strength for the day.
Absolutely, Neil. So glad we had this time together, and thank you for celebrating these 50 years with me.
They want to invite you to check out Johnny's website. You can find out where there's a Johnny organization in your area, johnnyandfriends.org, and check out Wheels to the World, especially looking in Minnesota, at least looking to find 5,000 chairs by the year 2020. So they're well on the way, but could use your help. And if you missed part of our conversation with Kay Wima, you can check that out too. We'll post the interviews on our show page, as always, at myfaithradio.com. Go to the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. I look forward to having you with us again next time for Connecting Faith. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.